another. With the name of love above all other. And every faith, a heart, a fallen brother can rediscover.
Welcome to the Rediscover Hour on Relevant Radio, a time to explore our Catholic faith and find out about ways to share the faith with others. Help create the possibility of an encounter with the person of Jesus Christ in the lives of others by living out the call to the new evangelization and helping fellow Catholics rediscover full life in the Church. The Rediscover Hour with Paul Sadek and Corey Regan starts now.
Welcome to the Rediscover Hour, brought to you on Relevant Radio by Stinson Electric, your trusted electrical advisor, solving electrical problems for commercial, industrial, and institutional facility managers. I'm Paul Sadek.
And I'm Corey Regan. Thanks for joining us today.
We're just finally getting into real springtime.
I mean,
but it's almost summer already.
It's glorious, and I don't use that word very often, but it's absolutely beautiful.
This is a spiritual time, without question.
For sure. Well, coming up today on the Rediscover Hour, raising our children, does the state have too much power? And that's the fascinating debate at the next Argument Club for Women. Ladies, you'll want to learn more about this opportunity to engage on important issues and find fun and fellowship.
We'll also hear from a man who has offered up his own suffering to help parents grieving the loss of a child.
And in no ordinary conversation with Archbishop Nienstedt, we'll listen in on his reflections on ordination to the priesthood.
Plus, we'll talk with a man preparing to be ordained May 31st in today's Answering the Call.
But first, we will start the show today like we usually do with Joe Towalski, editor of The Catholic Spirit. How you doing, Joe?
Good. I'm doing fine. Good morning, Corey. Good morning, Paul.
The paper just came out, so you've got your feet up on the desk.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
On a day like this.
Well, sure. Tell us what's in it.
Well, you know, the state legislative session ended last Friday, a little earlier than expected, and we've been updating readers all session long on a number of bills being followed by the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the official policy voice of the bishops. So this week, we give a quick snapshot of what passed and what didn't. And the conference was supportive of a couple of proposals that did pass, including an increase in the minimum wage and funds for affordable housing. But it was also really instrumental in ensuring that some legislation did not pass, and that included an effort by legislators to legalize surrogate birth contracts in the state. The Catholic Conference's opposition was supported by really a large grassroots network of Catholics in the pews that the conference has developed over time, and it's called the Catholic Advocacy Network. So people sign up online to get updates on policy issues and information about how they can take action on specific pieces of legislation. And this network played a really big role in defeating the efforts to legalize surrogacy contracts. I talked to the conference's executive director, Jason Adkins, about the network and what it does. So let's take a little listen to part of that interview.
It was a really big component of our advocacy efforts this year. It put a lot of issues on the table, particularly surrogacy, that may have gone under the radar. You know, we hear a lot at the Capitol about things that for some reason become hot button items: medical marijuana, Sunday closing laws, e-cigarettes. But then, you know, really substantive issues that are massive changes in public policy that really will really have an impact on people's lives, somehow those don't get talked about. And so in terms of changing the discussion and getting it outside the media environment and letting Catholics know what's going on, apart from the traditional news sources, that's an important piece of that. Not only does it inform Catholics and educate them about other key issues besides what the media is saying and framing, it also helps them speak to their legislators about those things and put bills on the table, or help legislators understand what issues are important beyond just what's the hot button issue in the media. And that was really important because it allows us then to get have an easier time at the Capitol getting a foot in the door, talking to people and letting them know that this is a big concern. So it really has a twofold effect. We've got a very sizable network in the tens of thousands, and we really keep seeing our numbers grow in terms of outreach to particular legislators. And as I always tell people, it's as few as 10 calls from to a legislator from people in his or her district can make a difference. We know that on a number of issues, legislators are getting 30, 40, 50 emails, mm-hmm. not including calls. Mm. You know, so it's really it was a big bonus and a big boon to our efforts on surrogacy, but also.
Yeah, so a great testament, I think, to the power of people in the pews if they just reach out to their legislators. And listeners can read more about the fate of some of the other legislation the conference is working on this session in this week's local news section.
Now, Archdiocesan Youth Day
coming up? That's, well, as you said, summer is just arriving, and you know, fall may seem a long way off, but it isn't too early to start thinking about Archdiocesan Youth Day.
And when is that?
The event this year is on Saturday, October 25th,
okay,
at the University of St. Thomas, and it's going to be a full day again. Archbishop Neinstedt will be there the whole time, and there will be Mass and some great music and opportunities for confession and adoration and service projects. And the keynote speaker is Sister Miriam James Heidland, a member of the Society of Our Lady of the Most Holy Trinity. Some people may know her. She's a very dynamic speaker on a number of topics, and she's also a volleyball coach. So
she'll
get out there with the kids at some point. But, you know, I've been to the last two Archdiocesan Youth Days to cover them, and, you know, it's a fabulous event. But it does tend to fill up early. So if there are any teens listening out there or parents who know this is something they want their son or daughter to attend, they need to make sure they contact their parish youth minister or pastor as soon as possible so those spaces are reserved.
Is that how they register?
Yeah, and then it's the parishes that register, you know, for the whole parish, exactly.
Great.
Now, ordination is coming up.
That's right. Next Saturday, May 31st, 10 a.m. at the Cathedral of St. Paul. And this week, we have some Q&As on a whole host of topics with the six men who will be ordained priests for our archdiocese. For example, one question we asked was what first prompted them to start thinking about a vocation to the priesthood. And for one of our men, Joe Kaharski, he got to know a lot of priests because his mom would invite them over to the house for some incredibly delicious homemade pizza.
All right.
And, you know, and for another, Marcus Millis, it was his brother who was just very important in helping him see that he had what it took to be a priest. And so we also asked questions ranging from what they're looking forward to about being a priest, all the way to what advice they would have for other young men out there who might be considering a vocation. And, of course, one of the men we feature is Mark Paveglio, who's going to be on the show next. And he was part of the Sons of Thunder team from our own St. Paul Seminary.
Oh, yes.
He competed last night
at
the American Bible Challenge.
How did they do?
Well, they did wonderfully well. I'm guessing he might want to talk just a little bit more
about
that. They made everybody from Minnesota watching very proud, though.
Awesome.
And they raised some significant money for the charity they were playing for, which was Net Ministry.
That's right.
So be sure to check out all the Q&As for all the men being ordained. And, of course,
how many do we have this time?
Well, we have six that are going to be ordained for the
Archdiocese. That's an excellent number.
It's a very good number. And we, you know, for this next week, we have to make sure we keep them in our prayers as they embark on this priestly vocation.
Yes. Memorial Day is just about here.
Yeah. And every time at this time of year, we have a special section devoted to it. And, you know, it's going to be a beautiful weekend, and what a great opportunity to attend one of the Memorial Day Masses that are going to be held in our Catholic cemeteries in and around the Twin Cities. And we have a schedule of those in this week's issue. And, you know, we probably don't remember as often as we should, I think, the sacrifices that men and women in our armed services have made and really continue to make, you know, to make the world a better place. And I've been looking back at some of my own family history, particularly a grandfather who was drafted during World War II, and going through some old photos and letters. And by going through those, you know, the sacrifices that he and my grandmother had to make are just very apparent when you read that. And most of us probably have similar family histories like that. So, you know, it's important time to remember the sacrifices that that were made so that we can live in freedom and in the society that we do.
Amen.
Well, let's look ahead a little bit. We've got about a minute left here.
Sure. Well, we have, in our issue coming out on June 5th, we'll have, of course, coverage from the ordination ceremony. Lots of pictures. Dave Hrabacek always gets some great shots there. So we'll be having a story and photos about that. And then looking ahead to our Rediscover section next week, the topic will be praying constantly. So we'll be exploring that in a variety of different ways as well.
And a lot of people always ask, how do you do that?
How
do you do that?
And, you know, the feature, which I have not seen yet, but I know Dave is interviewing a woman who has written a book. It has to do with pennies and prayer, because, you know, on the pennies, it says, "In God we trust," as it doesn't. And there is a, you know, it's kind of a way of reminding yourself throughout the day of God's presence in your life. So he's going to be interviewing the author of that book and see what kind of insight she has to share with us.
I look forward to it. Joe, thanks.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You
May
too.
22nd issue of The Catholic Spirit is out, and you can hear Joe Towalski, editor of The Catholic Spirit, every week here on the Rediscover Hour. And you can find The Catholic Spirit online anytime at thecatholicspirit.com.
And coming up on the Rediscover Hour, ladies, learn about a special evening to come together with other women and hear an intelligent discussion about important issues. Oh, and it's a chance to partake in some delicious libations and fun fellowship, too.
Plus, we'll hear from a man preparing to be ordained a priest for this archdiocese. And we'll hear Archbishop Neinstedt's reflections on ordination to the priesthood in today's No Ordinary Conversation. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Paul Archambault, owner of Stinson Electric, and we are the proud sponsor of the Rediscover Hour. Stinson Electric is a Catholic, family-owned company that serves the electrical construction and repair needs of local businesses, churches, and schools. Our faith and our motto of quality, integrity, and service guides our business decisions every day. For small projects, troubleshooting a circuit, or installing an outlet or light fixtures, we have a fleet of service trucks that are staffed by licensed electricians who are knowledgeable, courteous, and efficient. They have the latest technology to diagnose and repair your electrical problem. For larger projects such as new building, building additions, or relocating equipment, we'll help you design, budget, and build the project. Stinson Electric would like to be your trusted electrical advisor. I would welcome the opportunity to meet with you and discuss your electrical need. Call Stinson Electric, 612-424-7382.
And I just showed up.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Corey Regan.
And I'm Paul Sadek. From now until ordinations to the priesthood, May 31st at the Cathedral of St. Paul, we're featuring interviews with local seminarians.
And today we are joined by Transitional Deacon Mark Paveglio, a seminarian in formation for the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis at the St. Paul Seminary. Thank you for joining us, Deacon Mark, and game show contestant last night. Tell us about that real quickly, if you can. We're dying to know. How did y'all do?
We came real close to going on to the second round, but we got beat out by 1 point at the end.
Oh,
yeah, but it was a great run, and we had a lot of fun doing it.
Well, awesome. Tell me a little bit about this Klingon or Bible question that comes up.
Yeah. So Jeff Foxworthy gave us the Bible duo or country duo. And, Warab and Zeeb was the question we got, and, you know, I could see it going either way, but we got tricked up on that one for sure.
And there was three of y'all doing it, or how many?
Yeah, it was teams of three, so myself, okay. And then my brother seminarians Chad Van Hoos and Mark Pavlak were with me.
Awesome.
Well, tell us a little bit about Deacon Mark Paveglio and growing up and what led you to this decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I grew up never thinking about the priesthood until I graduated high school.
Never?
Never. Grew up Catholic, okay. Great respect for priests, but just wasn't on my radar.
All right. Sure.
Dating my girlfriend, planning for marriage, you know, down the road after college, but the Lord began to plant little seeds, and then the big change happened when I began to pray about it more kind of insistently before the Blessed Sacrament, and then my pastor in my home parish gave a homily about his own vocation story, which really just opened the floodgates for God to speak to my heart, and I just really felt the Lord's love pouring into me as he was speaking about the sacrifices he had to make, but then the joy he found in the priesthood. And I was so glad that he stepped up to the plate and gave those words on this particular day of my life, because everything changed after that.
It was one day.
January 10th, 2004.
That's amazing.
Opening up in prayer kind of did it for you, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a lot of prayer that was kind of leading up to this, and God wasn't giving me an answer for many months. I was like, Lord, if you want me to be a priest, these signs I'm getting, you've really got to tell me. And I was getting really frustrated with God. And then at this Mass, at this homily, it was like the dam finally burst, and the Lord really did say, yes, like, here's my call for you. And I had the grace to receive it and to look at seminary life.
Now, this past year, you've served as transitional deacon, and we've learned a little bit about what that means, but could you tell us what were some specific things you did this past year to help you prepare for the priesthood?
Yeah, some of the specific things was preaching at St. Lawrence and Newman Center in Minneapolis. It was a great experience there to proclaim the word, doing some baptisms as well. And then this year in seminary, of course, our focus has been really honing in on the sacramental celebrations. So practice confessions, practice mass. And then we also had this trip in January to Rome with our classmates to experience the Church Universal. So there's been all kinds of great just experiences this year to help us prepare.
Talk a little bit about the dynamic of working at the Newman Center with a lot of college-age people.
It's been great because I myself came from a Newman Center at Penn State. So I kind of feel like I came from Newman Center to Newman Center, but it's wonderful because the students there have a lot of energy. They're very inquisitive, and the students who are coming there, of course, are very intentional about their faith. You know, it could be so easy just to get pulled in the mainstream of just college life and just doing my own thing, but they're there because they're hungry for the Lord, and I just had some amazing conversations with them during the year, and could see a lot of good fruit coming out of all the work that's being done there.
And we talk a lot on the show about the new evangelization. So how would you like to answer that call in your priestly ministry to evangelize?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's something I've prayed about a lot. I think, you know, one way is that families are such a big part of the new evangelization, and next year we have the Synod for the Family in Philadelphia coming up. And I see that as really crucial. I know a family back where I'm from in Pennsylvania, every night after dinner, they pray together. And it's almost like, you know, the feeling when you have to miss supper or something comes up, and you're kind of thinking about, okay, like, what am I going to eat tonight? What am I going to eat? And for them, it's like the same thing of, like, if they don't pray together as a family, like, something's really missing from that day. They're hungry. So the Father leads them in prayer. They read the scriptures together. They sing some songs of praise to the Lord. And it's just so amazing how much they know Jesus Christ. So I would love to bring the new evangelization about in one way, by helping families to learn to pray together, to really teach that kind of skill to meet the Lord as a family, just as they're having physical food together, to get spiritual food as well.
Prayer really is key, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Really.
Is there anything in particular in your formation up to this point between the classroom training and the actual on-site work at the Newman Center that has stuck out in your mind? Do you have a particular incident that has made you go, wow, yes, this, I made the right decision?
Over the summer, I was at Holy Name of Jesus out by Plymouth, and just as a deacon, you know, I can bless people, and I had a relic with me one day of St. Charbel, and I asked after Mass one day if some people would like to just be blessed with that and to pray with that. Just a very small thing, but just to see people approach the Lord and receive a blessing in some part of their life that they need help with, I just saw so many people just move to tears to be blessed with this sacred object and to meet the Lord that way. And I was just blown away. It's something so small, but it's just when the Lord takes you as his minister, you become kind of transparent like a stained glass window to his grace. So even the smallest things like that have moved me so much over the years to see that it's not about me so much, but about God just using my surrender to help people, to heal people, to teach people. It's so small, but it's so amazing.
And tell us about, if you were going to give some advice to young men considering the priesthood, what would you say?
I would say, first of all, that if God's calling you to be a priest, it would be a very foolish thing to deny it, because it's an amazing life and an amazing gift. And the second thing I'd say is that one receives one's vocation in prayer, and prayer requires silence.
Uh-huh.
And we're in such a busy world of all kinds of distractions, but if we can make time for silence, then God will truly speak in the depths of our soul, and you will know your vocation.
You'll get the answers you need.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that is the call obvious to most people? Is it something that you can discern fairly easily, or does it take a long time and a lot of hard prayer?
And how confident are you once you make that decision that this is right?
Those are great questions, and I've talked to actually several students at the U this year about those questions. You know, it can really depend. Some men, they get a very powerful sign from God at the beginning of their vocational journey, like I did, but I had to have that confirmed. I had to really wrestle with it. But it was pretty strong the whole way through. Other men have just some inklings of, like, I think this might be the way to go, so I'll give seminary a try. And as they're in there, they grow in this kind of patient and enduring confidence that, like, yes, this is who I am, you know, mm-hmm. who I'm supposed to be. So it really varies, but the most important thing is if there's signs there, if you have the tug, young men, then just give it to the Lord and let him lead you, and don't say no to it.
I have asked a number of seminarians this, and I'll ask you too. What's good about being Catholic today?
Oh, there's so many things. The beauty about being Catholic, I think, is that all the good things that we desire out of life, everything that's good and beautiful and rich, the Catholic Church doesn't deny any of it. You know, we support faith and reason. We are the champions of what it means to truly love another human being and to love God. So it's beautiful to be Catholic because I don't need to deny a part of myself that's human to believe in Christ, to follow him.
Great answer. Well, thank you so much, Deacon Mark.
Thank you. It's great to be on.
Look forward to addressing you as Father Mark.
Thank you. Please pray for me and my classmates.
Oh, we will
for sure. Now, please make plans to attend the ordination to the priesthood on Saturday, May 31st at 10 a.m. at the Cathedral of St. Paul, and consider attending as a family.
The ordination will be shown live on Cable 6 and over the air on Channel 16.3 in the metro area. It'll be replayed on Cable 6 May 31st at 1 p.m. and all Sundays in June at 1 p.m. Check with your cable provider for details, and you can link to a live stream on archspm.org.
Now it's time for No Ordinary Conversation, a semi-regular segment here on the show featuring Archbishop John Nienstedt.
In today's No Ordinary Conversation, we listen in on a casual discussion between Archbishop Nienstedt and Father John Paul Erickson, the Director of Worship for the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. They spoke about the upcoming ordination of six men to the priesthood.
Archbishop, on the final Saturday of May, May 31st, the Feast of the Visitation, we'll celebrate the ordination to the Holy Priesthood, and I believe we have six men being ordained. Could you speak through this beautiful ceremony? I've been very fortunate to be able to be a part of these ceremonies, always very moving to me. I'm quite certain it is for you as well. Could you speak through the ceremony and describe some of the significant elements of it?
Yes, I'd be very happy to. With regard to the ordination liturgy, I'd like to emphasize five aspects. The first is the six promises that the candidate makes. First, he promises to discharge his office faithfully. So the role of the priest, to be faithful to what the church asks of him. Secondly, to preach the gospel in the words willingly and wisely. That means with my whole volition, my whole will, but also with my intellect. I have to do that wisely. Thirdly, to celebrate the sacraments faithfully and with reverence. So that's a commitment that he makes to do that, not just to get up in the morning and go out and celebrate Mass, but to do it with reverence and forethought. Then the fourth, to pray without ceasing for God's people.
That's a bit of a kicker, isn't it?
That's a real challenge, But that's what the church asks of a candidate. Fifth, to grow in union with Jesus Christ, that the priest, above all, I mean, we should all have this encounter with the Lord Jesus, but the priest, because he stands in the place of priests as an alter Christus, he needs to have a deep, intimate friendship with the Lord. He needs to spend time with the Lord and get to know him. And sixthly, and this is my favorite one, to be obedient to the bishop.
Yes, indeed. Very important.
And that is certainly right there. It's the last, but sometimes the last becomes first, you know,
indeed.
In the order of... And I think, you know, too, I've often said to the seminarians today that in my day, I think it was celibacy that was the most challenging of the vows that we take. But I think for priests today, obedience is really a central question.
Yes, indeed.
The second element, I would say, is the prostration that takes place during the litany. That a man completely throws himself on the ground, spreads out his arms, and he just is giving his life to the church. And that is a very beautiful, moving, impressive gesture. Thirdly, of course, the laying on of hands and the prayer of consecration, the prayer of ordination, I should say, in which the bishop, at that moment, through his ordination, he empowers this young man to celebrate the sacraments, to confect the Eucharist, to forgive sins in Christ's name. This is a very, very moving and important part of the ceremony. Fourthly, the reception of the gifts. And when the gifts are given from the people to the bishop and then to the individual now priest, The words are said, understand what you do, imitate what you celebrate, and conform your life to the Lord's cross. And so again, that sacrificial dimension, not just through the Eucharist, but in his whole life, the priest is called to be identified with the cross of Christ. And lastly, and very joyously, the kiss of peace, shared not with the total congregation, but between the bishop and the newly ordained and all the other priests that are represented. So it's sort of like saying, you're a member of this new fraternity.
Welcome
you're a member of this new
family. Brotherhood.
Welcome to the brotherhood.
Yeah, Archbishop, thank you. And you give me a lot to think about as this final month, and I look forward to being with you on May 31st for this beautiful event of the ordination.
I am too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, the ordination to the priesthood is Saturday, May 31st at 10 a.m. at the Cathedral of St. Paul. All faithful are warmly invited to come and celebrate and pray for our new priests.
And coming up today on the Rediscover Hour, an opportunity for women to hear intelligent debate about important social issues and have some fun at the same time, plus an invitation to local Catholics looking to learn more about the treasure that is our faith. We'll be right back.
Rediscover.
This is Evan Beacom with a cultural note from Catholic Studies at the University of St. Thomas. Alessandro Manzoni's novel of 1842, The Betrothed, would become the defining novel of Italian literature. Set in the horrifying circumstances of Milan in 1648, the novel follows the fortunes of a young betrothed couple, Renzo and Lucia. Manzoni portrays the historical realities of 17th century Milan and weaves into his story a number of historical figures, perhaps most notably the Cardinal Archbishop of Milan, Federigo Borromeo, the bold and brilliant cousin and successor to St. Charles Borromeo. The composer Giuseppe Verdi dedicated his Requiem to Manzoni. Pope Francis says The Betrothed is his favorite novel. The portrait of Borromeo might suggest why.
Relevant Radio is proud to bring you cultural notes from the University of St. Thomas Center for Catholic Studies. For information on local Catholic Studies events, go to the Events tab at relevantradio.com.
Truth begs to be taken for the next time. All faith is shaken, we find. As all things are made right in time.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Paul Sadek.
And I'm Corey Regan. And I think many people feel they are flooded with sensationalist soundbites on important issues, but believe there is a drought of intelligent debates on topics that really matter to them and to their families.
For nearly 15 years, Catholic men in this archdiocese have come together to hear such intelligent debate and strengthen their faith in the process. And for the past year, women have had this opportunity as well, through the Argument Club for Women, which launched at about this time last year. Their next event is coming up next Tuesday evening.
Yeah, and Dr. Deborah Savage is a co-founder and organizer of the Argument Club for Women, and she's also a member of the faculty at the St. Paul Seminary School of Divinity, where she teaches philosophy and theology, and is also the co-founder and co-director of the Siena Symposium for Women, Family, and Culture at the University of St. Thomas.
Dr. Savage is with us today to share more about the importance of having debates that help clarify important issues and offer insights into church teaching. Plus, she'll have details on how you can participate. Welcome, Dr. Savage.
Welcome
good to
back.
Have you back.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your role in the Argument Club for Women.
Well, briefly, we, as you mentioned, started it about a year ago. Myself and Eileen Douglas at St. Michael's in Stillwater, she's actually the executive director of the St. Croix Faith Formation Group. And we work together with a somewhat larger group of women to get it off the ground and organized each time. And we actually, this time now, we have next year planned. So
that's good.
We'll be able to tell people on Tuesday night what we'll be talking about next year.
And how? What was the goal of it? I mean, obviously, there's a corresponding men's group that does this type of thing every month.
Yeah. Well, one of the areas I write in is the intellectual life of women. And it seems really obvious in our current culture that moms and women in general have to be equipped to explain, argue,
answer questions
from children and others about some of the current issues we face. It's just not enough to teach your children how to make an apple pie anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it never was.
Never was. I should.
So right now, and there's just so many confusing questions out there, things their children are facing, that it seems really obvious. Women are at least one of the keys, maybe the essential key to the recovery of our culture. And so our effort is to equip women with the arguments they need to combat the effects of the culture on their families, on their children, on their communities, and to give voice to what I refer to as the prophetic voice of women in our culture.
Now, I've missed this whole last year. I'm curious, do you guys put information somewhere where I could go and kind of recap what's been talked about?
Oh, yes.
That would be helpful.
We're working on a website, but right now we have a Facebook page.
Okay.
And you can just Google that. And all of the videos from previous events,
perfect,
as well as the topics that we've covered and everything we've done so far is there.
Play catch up real
yes.
quick. Okay.
Describe the scene a little bit, if you would,
sure,
at an argument club for women. Is there some fist shaking?
Feisty?
Oh, well, no, women generally, it's
a little more civil.
I don't want to say anything bad about the men.
Polite.
But it is true. Well, it is true. It's a little different than the men. The men, for one thing, they have a cocktail hour and a big dinner. We just have some wine and appetizers.
Uh-huh.
And we only do it 3 or 4 times a year so far because moms can't get away that often or drink
sure.
that much or eat that much dirt, uh-huh. you know, once a month. But, and it is true that women prefer a more civil approach. Perhaps I have heard the men get pretty rambunctious at times. I haven't been invited, so I can't say for sure, and that's just fine. But it's definitely a debate, and what I have noticed especially is in the Q&A period after the speakers have had their say, the questions that the women ask are very pointed, very, very well-formed questions. And the last debate in particular was on whether or not we all get to define truth and morality for ourselves, if that's the definition of freedom. And the gentleman that argued for the sort of opposing view was truly stumped by some of the questions that the women asked.
Are
it
they
was quite
both
impressive.
Catholic or no?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
No, in fact, well,
be.
Not usually.
I was going to say, is it one-sided then? I mean, do you have...
Oh, no. Well, what we start out with is first we have an hour of hospitality, wine and appetizers. Then we have the beginning. The first thing we do is have the parish priest or pastor lay out what the church's teaching is on the particular topic. We want there to be no confusion about whether or not we're actually debating the church's teaching, because we're not.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What we're trying to understand is what supports that teaching and what are the arguments out there that seem to be opposing it, so that we can really, the audience can learn for itself what those arguments are and how to respond to them. The meetings are open to persons of all, women of all faiths and backgrounds. So
okay.
we often have had people that aren't in agreement with the church's teaching, and that's actually perfect, because those are the people that we want.
You want both sides.
We want them to understand the church is not arbitrary in any way on any issue. The church always has a reason for what
yeah.
she teaches. And at a minimum, we want them to walk away realizing that. And so it's been very, very fruitful. So we have an actual debate with an argument presented and a rebuttal and a counter-rebuttal and then another argument presented and so on. We go back and forth until we feel we've exhausted the speakers, at least,
uh-huh.
or we've run out of time, and then we have question and answer. So
very, very organized
format. It's structured.
Yeah. So. Now, next Tuesday, correct?
Yes.
Now, what is the topic for that one?
Next,
tell us
next
about that.
Tuesday, the topic is raising our children. Does the state have too much power? And with the bullying bill, the recent changes in medical care, the way education is developing in our state, in particular with the core, what do they call it? Core curriculum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many examples of places where the state is encroaching on the rights of parents to care for their children, to educate them in ways that are both explicit and very subtle and scary. For example, the anti-bullying bill, so-called, that just passed last year, really does not prevent bullying in any sense of that term, not in the way it should. And in fact, what it will result in is any child who expresses their family's viewpoint on gay marriage and other issues
yes. mm-hmm.
will be taken to task for that.
And told that they're bullying.
Right.
Doesn't this kind of trivialize the real bullying?
Absolutely it does. It's just, it's really a terrible thing. And that was pushed through by the gay agenda. It's so obvious. I'm sorry. I hate to be too, you know, judgmental. I don't mean it that way. But it's, you know, I certainly have the right to teach my daughter, Maddie, what the meaning of marriage and family is.
Mm-hmm.
And she should not be accused of bullying another child simply because she disagrees. And this is what's happening in our culture, is that the power of human reason to articulate and express a reasoned argument is now considered hate speech. Mm-hmm. And this will be the last bastion of our ability to recover the culture will be destroyed if we are unable to make public arguments about what we think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this doesn't mean I get to be violent or mean or anything like that toward anyone, but I do have the right, constitutional right, as a matter of fact, to express my viewpoints publicly and reasonably.
Do you have a difficult time finding someone to take the opposing point of view?
It might be hard.
It is at times.
It's scary for them. But
it is at times. In fact, this time we were not able to find a speaker to express the opposing point of view. We had a few that backed out. And in the end, we've invited Autumn Leva, who is with the Minnesota Family Council, to serve as our proxy opponent, and she's agreed to do that. What usually happens is, first of all, the people we call can't really believe that we're asking for an actual debate.
Yeah.
And then it takes a time for them to figure that out, and then they have to think about it, and then they, you know, are maybe not too sure if they can do it. Although, this time what we discovered is people's calendars are full too. So we do have a whole network of speakers we're developing, people that are willing to come and talk about the issues in this way. And in fact, what I find is most people are tired of the vitriol and the bullet points and the talking heads and all that. Really, when we say, wouldn't it be nice to simply find a way to articulate these positions and have a civil discourse about it? Most of the people we've talked to are really excited by that and impressed that the church or a group from the church is actually seeking that out.
And now, last time when we spoke with you, you were heading to D.C. With a group of church leaders and scholars to send documents to the Vatican on the role of women in the church.
Right.
So tell us how that went.
Oh, that was amazing. And it was all women. You know, it was the scholars working on women from various walks of life, not all of them scholars, but all of them involved in women's groups or issues or that sort of thing. And I think I mentioned last time my particular contribution was on the masculine genius, because I feel that's something missing from our discourse, if you will, on this topic. And that created quite a bit of excitement.
Yeah.
And so that paper has been finished and is on its way, or has been sent to Rome. And I kind of jokingly say to people, I'm expecting a call from Pope Francis any day.
With his
never know with him.
Yes,
he might.
So did you write your phone number at the bottom?
No, I didn't. I should have. But all the papers went to Rome, and then they're also going to be published in a volume. And the publisher will be our Sunday Visitor. I'm not sure when that will come out, but it will be out.
Dr. Deborah Savage, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Now, here are the details on the next Argument Club for Women event that takes place this upcoming Tuesday, May 27th at St. Hubert in Chanhassen. The evening will begin at 6 p.m. with wine and appetizers, and the actual debate begins at 7 p.m. The question this time, like we just spoke about, is raising our children. Does the state have too much power?
The event costs $10, no registration required. We've set up a link to more information about the Argument Club for Women on our show page. Just go to rediscover-faith.org and click on radio in the top navigation bar.
This Memorial Day week, and many of us will pause to remember loved ones who have died, and perhaps we'll go to the gravesite to clean the marker or leave flowers. Maybe we'll dedicate a special time of prayer to those grieving the loss of a family member or of a friend.
One local man has experienced staggering loss in his life, the deaths of four children. Bob Labatt has since reached out to dozens of parents grieving the loss of a child. Reporter Dave Herbacek interviewed Bob for a story in this week's issue of The Catholic Spirit and shared this excerpt.
For several years, and I don't know why I did this other than I was led to do it, shortly after Patrick's death. You know, you look at the obituary page, especially as you get older like I am, you look at it and you see friends of yours dying, but then you also see young people being recorded as, in almost all cases, accidental deaths. I can't remember if it was a year or 2 years, but it's definitely within 2 years after Patrick's death. There was a young lady who was from out at Orno. She died in a sorority fire at a party down in, I think it was La Crosse. It was written up also a little bit in the paper because it was a very tragic death. And I did not go to her funeral. She was buried from Holy Name. But I was up at the boys' graves one day, shortly after that, and I saw a woman standing by this gravesite. And I knew that was a new gravesite. So I'd looked at it earlier and I knew it was this young woman. And I went down there, it was a mother. I visited with her. And just instinctively it came to me, and I asked her what was going on while she was at a party. And I said, well, it's unfortunate, but I'm sure she must have enjoyed parties. Yes, she did. And I'm happy about that. And I said, well, I want to let you know, when I saw the gravesite here earlier the last week, I asked my boys to look her up and show her around. So I'm sure she's definitely being shown around heaven, I can assure you that. It just came to me to say that. And she looked at me like I was kind of different, of course. And she said, oh, what did you say again? And I said, well, I just asked my boys to look up your daughter and show her around heaven. Well, why would you say that? And I said, well, you know, if your daughter went to Easter vacation down to Florida, and I always use this, I said, you had friends or relatives in Florida, you'd probably tell her to look them up, right? At least say hello. Yeah. And I said, well, that's all I've done. I've just asked Paul and Tim and Patrick to look up your daughter and show her around. You know what she said? She said, did your boys like parties? And I said, I'll tell you right now, my son Timmy was a party animal. No question about it. He loved parties. Okay? So, and she had a big smile on her face and she thought it was great and she gave me a big hug. A year later, I found out there was a memorial mass for that girl 1 year later at Holy Name. I went to it. I was standing out in the gathering space area afterwards, and the mother came up to me and gave me a great hug and said that I had helped her for the entire year, that I had made a major difference to her, and that just the thought that her daughter wasn't alone was very, very good for her. And she thanked me profusely. So I realized then at that time that I probably should continue to do that. So when I'd see a obituary of a young person, I would go to their funeral as much as possible.
Bob is now focusing his attention on thanking priests and religious for their vocations. He says the support of a local priest during this time of great loss was essential. It helped him to be better, not bitter. This June, Bob begins work as the new national president of Sarah International, which is dedicated to fostering and affirming vocations to the priesthood and vowed religious life.
And you can see Bob Labatt's story in the current issue of The Catholic Spirit or online at thecatholicspirit.com, and we'll be right back. Rediscover.
Hi, I'm Paul Archambault from Stinson Electric. You're a facility manager or business owner with electrical or lighting needs, we can help. Have you heard the buzz lately about energy efficient lighting? You wonder if it makes sense for your facility? You may not know who you should call or who you can trust. Energy efficient lighting installations are usually eligible for utility rebates that defray part of your initial investment. Often these projects pay for themselves in as little as 1 year. You gain the added benefit of better quality lighting, less maintenance, and energy efficiency. We have designed and installed lighting upgrades for churches, schools, and commercial buildings for customers just like you who are often astonished with the results. We also install and service outdoor lighting on buildings and in parking lots to enhance safety and security. Call Stinson Electric, 612-424-7382.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Paul Sadek.
And I'm Corey Regan. Well, what did the Pope say this week?
Well, he has always got something to say.
He does. He said, this is the peace of Jesus. It's a person. It's a great gift. Talking about peace and where we find peace. Money does not give you a definitive peace.
Imagine that.
I know. the stock market can crash. Your money's all gone. It's not secure. It's superficial, temporal. But when the Holy Spirit is in our hearts, no one can remove his peace, no one, and it's definitive.
The Holy Father cautioned attendees at the Mass that we must safeguard the Holy Spirit without imprisoning him, and that if we truly have this peace of the Spirit and are aware of it, let not your heart be troubled. Well, if you've been considering participation in the Archbishop Harry J. Flynn Catechetical Institute, now is the time to act. Registration is now open for the 2014 to 2016 class. Deadline to apply is June 1st.
And for more on this faith-building and life-changing opportunity, we are joined by Kelly Walquist, Program Manager for the Institute, and Mark Jager, a recent Catechetical Institute graduate and Class Corps team leader. Thank you both for joining us today.
Great to be here.
Now, Mark, you just graduated, is that correct? Last week. Okay. So very recent.
Yeah, fresh and new out.
Yes, I was like, we can see his halo there. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience at the Catechetical Institute and how it's made a difference in your life? I'm sure you could go on and on, but briefly, stands out?
I think what my heart was prepared and my desire was there, but really got touched by the Holy Spirit to initiate my entry into the program. But what happened was, is as you embark and learn, you know, there's a lot of reading you could do and should do with that program. But I started out slow, and all of a sudden it flowered and greatly inspired me in my heart and kind of drove me into action. Toward this focus even to extending beyond with involvement with core team and really now greatly desiring to be God's hand and feet with the message of Christ.
What do you find, Kelly? Is this normal for someone to enter the program and then basically have the doors open after they get into it? Or do a lot of them come in kind of thinking, okay, I need this to do this ministry?
Okay, the good Catholic answer. Both and.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
But I think the first one is pretty common, that a lot of people sometimes feel overwhelmed, and you don't there, it's that hesitancy of what's going to be, what's going to happen, and then they get there, and within, Mark will probably attest to it too, probably within 2 to 3 weeks, all of a sudden doors start opening and light bulbs start going on. And it's like, oh, I can really do this. And not only can I do this, I am yearning to do this. I just want to know more and more and more. So I think that's probably very common, that people may think, my life's too busy. There's no way I can fit in. You know, and then all of a sudden, it's like, okay, I'm going to fit more of this in because I really like it.
Make time for it, yeah.
And you think if you can make time to go bowling every Wednesday night,
right?
You could probably make time to do this. And once you find something you love, you make time for it.
And Mark, when you were kind of thinking about doing this, was there a moment that you just said, yes, I have to do this? Or did you ease into it? And then once you started thanking God that you did it? I mean, I'm sure probably part of both, but...
Well, I was inspired by a couple other people that went through the program.
Okay.
But what greatly put me on fire, as Kelly alluded to, is after you're there for a week or two and you start embarking on the reading of this big, thick book that had been on my shelf for about 15 years collecting dust.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you realize the beauty that's there, not only there in the book, but in your faith and your desire to be and grow.
And you don't have to be, you know, have any schooling or, like you say, theology steeped in order to enter the class. You just, anybody can do it.
What was your background before you entered the Catechetical Institute?
I've been in executive and business and all the way, you know.
So you're not a theologian?
I'm not a theologian, and I was inspired about 30 years ago with a breakfast conversation where somebody challenged my faith and my my drive toward scriptural understanding, and that began my journey. And this you know, it took it to a new level. It just, it was an exponential change. It wasn't a gradual. As I got into it, it was like, you know, the brightest colors that you could ever imagine opened up. And, you know, it was kind of like eating Doritos. You just can't eat one. You have to have the whole bag.
Gone. That's
right. Did you just compare the Institute to a bag of Doritos?
That is a great analogy. Thank you. Yes. Now, this class core team leader, what does that mean? And you'll be serving as a leader. What are you going to do?
Well, partly through the program, I was greatly inspired because what I saw was this beautiful program, and it was like, okay, how do we engage 155 people in a motion that really becomes motivated toward discipleship to God? And what my motivation was, we had these kind of off-site meetings where we gathered people after some of the classes, and it was really about developing relationship and community, and then how do we march forward? And Kelly and I sat down, and we kind of come up with this idea that, you know, how do we take this? How do we now take our class, continue formation, because that fire's alive. People didn't want to quit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's how do you continue that? But now, really, we have to go and not put the light or the bushel basket over that light of our goodness for God.
Kelly, we have a new office, the Office of Evangelization. What's the relationship between the Catechetical Institute and the Office of Evangelization?
If you would graduate from the Catechetical Institute, you would learn how to say it. Yeah, that's the whole joke. There's a huge, a very huge relationship because we're looking at evangelization and catechesis, which are two things that go completely hand in hand. And you can't share that which you don't know. And evangelization is sharing Christ. So knowing him is so important. And what evangelization is it's opening up in an encounter with Christ. Well, once you have that encounter and you're on fire, like Mark alluded to, then you want to know more about his church and the beauty of his church. And that's where catechesis comes in. And so with the Catechetical Institute, we've got these people going through formation and really getting to know their faith. And now they can work with the Office of Evangelization. Now, look at it, I'm going to have to go to school for that. And they can work with that office and go out and share the faith and bring others in, bring others that potential to have that encounter with Christ.
Well, Mark, what would you say, or Kelly, to someone considering it? I mean, what would be your spiel to get them?
Give us the pitch.
Well, number one.
Not that they would need much talking into. I mean, after just meeting you and seeing your halo and your angel wings there.
Well, I number one, don't be intimidated by the name. Don't be intimidated by the catechism, mm-hmm. because it's you're eating it in pieces, and only realize that you will have a transformational heart change and change toward your future. That the only thing stopping you from growing in complete deep spirituality and relationship with Christ, even much deeper, and wanting to share it with others, the only restriction will be you and how you go forward in time. This program is on fire.
Kelly, how does a person sign up?
I would say sign up quickly. That would be the first thing. I do want to say it's very easy. You can go to the website and get an application at cistudent.com. I will encourage you to go ahead and send in your application. I know if you're looking at right now and you're listening to this, you're thinking, wow, that's really on my heart, but I don't think I can get my pastor to write a recommendation letter in a week. Don't worry about it. Just let the pastor know. There's an address there. He can send it to us afterwards, but get the application in. It's filling up. So.
Well, thank you guys so much for being here, Kelly and Mark, and it was wonderful speaking with you on this great institute.
Excellent. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Now, here are the basics on the next Archbishop Harry J. Flynn Catechetical Institute class starting this September. The class of St. Gianna, which runs through early May 2016, will meet on the St. Paul Seminary campus, and classes are divided into four 11-week modules and meet on Monday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., with two Saturday morning formative sessions per module.
Applications are being accepted now for the 2014-2016 Class of St. Gianna. Deadline is June 1st. For more information on the Catechetical Institute, visit our show page at rediscover-faith.org. We posted a link to the Catechetical Institute site there, or call the Catechetical Institute, 651-962-5028. That's 651-962-5028.
And time now for a quick look at Catholic events happening around town. Ladies, as you heard earlier in the show, The next Argument Club for Women takes place Tuesday, May 27th at St. Hubert in Chanhassen, and it starts at 6 p.m. with wine and appetizers, and the debate begins at 7 p.m. The topic is Parents versus State, Who Gets to Raise Our Children? And these events are a fun and fascinating way to learn more about important issues and find fellowship with other women.
Make plans now to attend the ordination to the priesthood Saturday, May 31st at 10 a.m. at the Cathedral of St. Paul. Consider attending as a family. All the faithful are warmly invited. Come celebrate and pray for our new priest.
And then later that same day, you're invited to St. Mark's Acoustic Cafe. That's Saturday, May 31st from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. in Carolyn Hall at St. Mark in St. Paul. This fun evening features food, board games, and of course, great live music by Catholic musicians in a coffeehouse atmosphere. It only costs $5, and find out more on the St. Mark's Acoustic Cafe Facebook page.
Archbishop Neinstedt invites you to celebrate the beautiful mystery of the mutual self-gift between a man and a woman in the sacrament of matrimony on Saturday, June 7th at the Cathedral of St. Paul. Mass is at 10 a.m. with a renewal of vows, and that's followed by a short reception. Certificates to commemorate the gift of marriage between a man and a woman are available for couples married one or more years. To receive a certificate, contact the Office of Marriage, Family, and Life, 651-291-4488. That's 651-291-4488. And coming up on the Rediscover Hour, we're looking ahead to the 2014 Rediscover Catholic Celebration with Jeff Cavins and Leah Darrow, just two of the many amazing speakers who will take the stage that day. Find out how you can take part in this day of inspiration and celebration.
And we'll hear from Judy Cousins about her unwavering commitment to life. The Rediscover Hour, Fridays at 9 a.m., Saturdays at 6 p.m., and Sundays at 9 a.m., right here on Relevant Radio.
The Rediscover Hour is heard every Friday morning at 9, Saturday evening at 6, and Sunday morning at 9 on Relevant Radio 1330. You can find show audio archives at rediscover-faith.org and at relevantradio.com. Keyword, Rediscover. The Rediscover Hour is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis in cooperation with Relevant Radio. Rediscover.